Welcome to the Wellness Ultimatum Radio. I'm your host, Omar Cumberbatch, and today we have an exciting guest, Dr. Eddie Fadakoff. Dr. Eddie Fadakoff is the co-author of the Doctors Clinic 30 program and has spent years as a personal trainer and nutritionist, helping his clients with weight issues and providing them with tools for a healthier lifestyle. Now, as a physician in training and a member of American Society of Bariatric Physicians, he plans to dedicate his focus on bariatric medicine to help his patients not only lose weight, but to keep it off. Doctor, are you on the line?
Yeah, how you doing, Omar? Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Doc. Was there a little pause, a delay or something going on? A couple of minutes, that's what she said, with Block Talk Radio.
I'm sorry?
Did you notice a little pause or anything between when she said the Blog Talk Radio, and was there like a little delay or something like that? Did you notice?
Yeah, there's about a 1 minute delay.
Oh, okay. All right, no problem. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
Doing great, doing great. Really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing this information about this book. This is a, you know, really, really interesting book. It actually has like a lot of elements that very different from common diet books, but I'm going to just ask you to talk a little bit about, you know, your journey and how you got into, you know, your field and everything, and just let the audience know a little bit about yourself.
Sure. It actually started when I was a teenager. I actually broke my arm, and, you know, when you broke your arm and you have a cast for about 6 months, you can't really do any activity at that point. So I gained a little bit of weight, and, you know, my brother was skinny, had the six-pack. I'm originally born in Russia, lived in New York, and then moved down to Atlanta, so we never actually had to take our shirts off, and in New York, rarely, or in Russia, as you can imagine, it's always cold. So came down to the South, I was putting on some weight, and it wasn't until I broke my arm that I realized, you know, how much weight I put on. And, you know, I was a preteen, I was around 11, 12 years old, and at that time, you know, going to middle school and high school, weight was a big issue. So I went to physical therapy, and then it kind of set the pathway for me working out ever since. When I went to physical therapy, I started hitting the gym, started working out, and just lived a healthy lifestyle. When I graduated high school, I became a personal trainer, went to college as a with the major in nutrition and exercise minor as a minor, got my MBA, went to med school, and now in the residency and completing training, I just want to focus on weight loss medicine. You know, I've done it from all three angles. As a personal trainer, I've worked out and trained my patients to lose weight. As a nutritionist, writing diet plans for them and working on that aspect. And now as a physician with weight loss medications and diet counseling, I feel like I can hit it from all three angles, and I understand what it means from all three angles. I was obese once myself.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting story. And again, like you said, you are covering it from all three angles. And that's important because, you know, it is a totality to tackle the weight, you know, issue in this country. And, you know, why do you think our country is facing an epidemic of obesity?
I think, in you know, different authors or different physicians will tell you different reasons why. I think it's just, besides the refined sugars and the processed sugars and the high fructose corn syrup, it's the amount of fat we're eating. The amount of fat we're eating is double the amount of calories that you get from carbohydrates and for protein, and the amount of alcohol we're consuming. So I think that's a big factor in the obesity epidemic. This interesting fact, Omar, you probably read in the book, obesity has surpassed tobacco smoking as the most preventable cause of death in the United States. That to me is mind-boggling. Everybody's saying quit smoking, cause lung cancer. Quit smoking is the most preventable thing you can do. Well, obesity has surpassed that. Obesity should be the number one topic people should be talking about. Why do we need to lose weight? It's the number one preventable cancer, and then second would be smoking. And most of them go hand in hand, you know. I think those are the main reasons we're getting overweight. You know, 60% of our country is overweight and obese. That's a big portion. Not to mention, you know, 17% of our children are overweight, and they're going to be the wave of the future. That, to me, is scary, you know. And you probably noticed this. You go to airplanes, they have bigger chairs now. You go to buses, they have bigger chairs now. You go to a clothing store, they have bigger clothes. They're adapting to a new society of obese patients as the norm. It should not be the norm. It's not healthy, you know. It's okay to feel confident in your body, skin and in your body, and be comfortable in your body, whether you're big or you're skinny. But the health risks are just tremendous, you know.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And that's, it's kind of going into condoning this kind of new lifestyle and the new body image that I guess they're saying is acceptable, but the truth is it's just not healthy at this point. You know, it's causing a host of other issues.
Exactly. And Omar, I guess you can appreciate this. You know, weight loss is multi-complex. It's not just a physician. It's not just a personal trainer you need. It's not just a nutritionist helping. It should be a team effort like physicians are, you know. And the hospital work as a team. Everybody works as a team. You have the social worker. You have the nurse. You have the physical therapist. You have the occupational therapist. Same thing with obesity. You need to have the counseling there. You need to have the life coach. I know you're a life coach yourself. That is very, very important because I can do so much as a physician in the amount of time I see the patients. You need people outside motivating and saying you can do it, having that trainer there saying you can do it. At the end of the day, it's all about accountability. And I'd like to give you a perfect example. Patients come into my office. There's patients that have been coming into the weight loss clinic for 30 years. They're probably skinnier. They're healthy. They've been coming since the 1980s because it's when the clinic is a multi-practice clinic. And I always ask them, why do you come? You probably know more nutrition than I do. You've been coming here since the 1980s. And you know what their answer is?
What's that?
Accountability. They say, if I come, I know if I mess up or if I cheat, you know, my doctor is going to give me a prep talk and motivate me to get me motivated again. And I thought, and I said, that's exactly true. Because me, like, I play guitar. I don't miss my guitar lesson. If I miss my guitar lesson, I get lazy. I try not to practice as much. But if I'm accountable, I know I have to see my guitar guy every week. I'm going to play more and stuff like that. And that's just human nature. That's just how we built. So having that accountability is good. And I saw it when I was a personal trainer. They would come and just pay just so you can have a personal trainer. So that way they're accountable. So the personal trainer can motivate them, can tell them, send them with a life coach, send them with a nutritionist. There's a sense of accountability that forces the person to get motivated, forces you to come and continue living a healthier lifestyle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely agree. I think that's one of the reasons, you know, I guess everyone can have an argument of pro and con about even Weight Watchers, but Weight Watchers, one of the things that I appreciate the most about them is the fact that that you have a bunch of people who are holding you accountable. And, you know, that buddy system that they have and the weigh-ins and everything keeps you on your grind. So I really do think that accountability, I 100% agree with you, is an immense part of the weight loss program.
And speaking of Weight Watchers, I'm glad you mentioned Weight Watchers because they just came out with a study last week and they looked at commercial weight loss programs, and the number one weight loss program that worked was Weight Watchers. Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig, and it's because they had a program, they had a system. They had accountability. It was easy to follow. It was easy to use. The patients didn't have to count calories. They didn't have to keep a diary. They didn't have to buy expensive gym membership. They didn't have to go to a grocery store and spend thousands of dollars at Whole Foods. It was simple. It was a membership, that an online forum. There's a community. You go to the store. There's a point system. People want easy. I mean, honestly, and I guess some of my colleagues in the office are not going to be happy about what I have to say, but let's be real. Nobody likes to diet. Nobody likes the word diet. Mm-hmm. It's temporary. I don't like the word diet. And if you don't believe me, Omar, they actually did a study in a Journal of Psychology. They looked at the word diet. People who dieted, 83% failed. Fact. Just because they used the word diet. That's why my book, it's a program. It's a lifestyle. It's a way of living. To me, diet is temporary. And you've probably heard this. You went to the doctor, or, you know, a family member that went to the doctor and said, look, you got high blood pressure. We need to put you on the DASH diet. Or you got diabetes, let's put you on a diabetic diet. Or you got, you know, this disease, let's put you on a diet. And automatically in your mind, you're thinking, okay, I have to be on this diet. It's temporary. Once your blood pressure goes good and you go to the doctor and you say, look, my doctor said my blood pressure is great. They're back to eating whatever they want. Same thing with the diabetics. They're back to eating what they want. Then I came back in clinic. I'm like, what happened? You did so good. You gave them that positive reinforcement. Then they think they can get off the diet. To them, it's temporary. You know,
yeah.
People diet for spring break. People diet to go on vacation. People diet for high school reunion. People diet for that wedding they want to get ready for. So for them, in their mind, they're already built in, okay, I have to do this for a couple weeks. I have to do this for a couple months. If you say you have to diet for the rest of your life, that's automatically restriction. They don't have to do something. They want to do it, you know. It's a choice.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. Yeah, you know, you have to turn it into a lifestyle. It's like, anything with an end date is going to be a problem because, like you said, they're just going to pick up the bad habits that they were doing, and it's going to lead to weight gain again. And I'm glad you gave me a good segue into, like, why is your book so different than the other diet books out there?
Sure, that's actually a good question. You know, why should your listeners even listen to what I have to say, or why should they purchase my book when there's so many diet books out and, you know, so many New York Times bestsellers? And, you know, basically it's what you look for. My book is not a diet. It's not a fad diet. It's not, you know, a quick lose 30 pounds, which is, I think, unhealthy weight loss. My book is different. It's first of all, it's published. We actually did the research. We published in International Journal of Obesity, so everything is validated. It's not my opinion or the other physician's opinion. It's published research. We tested on real patients, and we saw real success. And my book doesn't go into calorie counting, gym memberships, working out in the gym 4 or 5 hours a day. It doesn't go into, you know, going to the grocery store and racking up an expensive grocery bill, or having an expensive gym membership, or keeping a diary, as so many other systems do. Mine is based on the point system, what I call the exchange system. It's been around for 70 years. It's proven. It's got research. There's a track record to it. That's what Weight Watchers uses. That's why they're so successful after year after year after all the weight loss programs fail. And basically, I teach you how to do that in the book in 10 minutes. You don't have to spend for expensive membership like Weight Watchers, or go to the store and figure out what point system it is and just look up 5 points, 2 points. You can calculate in your head. It's going to get some time for you to get used to it. But I set it up on the Weight Watcher system. I teach you how to do the points, and everything's portion control. So that way you can eat the foods that you love without holding the restrictions. I split the book up into three phases. You have education phase. You have to teach. You have to teach about nutrition and proper, what's good, what's bad. Then I have a slimming phase. Well, this is the phase you lose all the weight that you're going to be happy with. And then I have a maintenance phase, which pretty much is the phase for the rest of your life. You add the food that you love with small habits and small adjustments, and then that's it. For the rest of your life, you're happy. And you've heard this saying, the more guys will come in to the weight loss community and say, look, I eat whatever I want. I work out. I can keep the weight off. And you're saying, okay. And most people are good at keeping the same weight they're at. Obviously, they want to come to your clinic. They're not rapidly gaining weight. They're staying at, you know, they're like, I've gained 30 pounds in the past 2 years. I want to lose this. So they're content at keeping the 200 or the 230 pounds. So what I do in this book is I get them to the slimming phase to get to the weight that they're happy at. And then the maintenance phase will maintain it for the rest of their life, you know. So that way, they never feel like they're dieting. They eat whatever they want. They drink whatever they want. They can have alcohol back in their diet, you know, if they drink. So the whole point is you're never actually dieting.
Yeah, if you know that's important. And again, like you had mentioned earlier, it's like when you put restrictions of in your head of like an end date, it really sabotages a lot of people as far as their, you know, their willingness to keep on going with diet. So that's definitely an excellent point. So, like, describe what people will learn from the book. Obviously, it's going to teach them how to do, you know, maintain this as a lifestyle throughout. But what are the things in the book, that you feel like they should definitely take heed to going forward with their diet plans, or I should say their lifestyle plans?
Well, there's a cognitive, basically, behavioral therapy. They've done studies after studies. If you don't change bad habits, new ones won't get formed. And so, even if you're on this diet, which I don't like the word diet, if you're on this lifestyle program and you're not changing your habits, then it's not going to do any good. Anybody can lose weight. They don't need a physician to lose weight. They don't need a nutritionist. Everybody can pick up a book, lose weight. But the goal is, can they keep it off? That's what my goal is. That's where I see the frustration in dieting. And that's why I feel like, you know, my book does something different. It doesn't just offer weight loss. You know, those books that say 20 pounds in 2 weeks, they're not lying. They probably can lose 20 pounds in 2 weeks. But none of those show sustained weight loss. You know, the Atkins, the Paleo, the Zone diet, the Dugan diet, all those diets work. They have research behind them, they have evidence behind them, but they're all short term, 2 years. After 2 years, most of them gain the weight back and gain 5% more body fat. I haven't seen studies that show out 10 years, 15 year projections. So my goal is, you want something that's going to sustain for the rest of your life. So it's eating habits. So from the book, you'll learn how to eat more and lose more. That's my motto. Eat more to lose more. And people find that mind boggling. And let me explain that, because people think they have to do calorie restriction. That doesn't work. There's more to it than just restricting calories. There's a metabolism aspect. And metabolism means changing your body. So it's hormonal, gut bacteria, everything that goes in your body. Hormone levels, thyroid levels. So I tell people, you have to eat every couple hours. Every 2 or 3 hours you have to eat. And I say, why, doc? I only eat once or twice a day. I'm going to work all day. And then I said, if you look at the skinny people, they're always eating. They'll eat lunch, and they'll say, I have to take that to go. I'll be hungry in an hour. And you're looking at them like, oh, my God, how is this person always eating? They stay so slim. Well, that's the secret. They're always eating. And I always like to compare it to sumo wrestlers. I tell my patients, So you eat, you skip breakfast. They said, correct. You wake up in the morning, you go for a run. You don't grab anything to eat. They say, yes. I say, you come at home, you binge eat at night. They said, yes. Well, I'm like, that's exactly what a sumo wrestler does to gain weight. And you're thinking by doing that is to lose weight. So it's just, it's basically, you have to teach them because they're basically coming in to my office eating like a sumo wrestler and wanting to lose weight. So when I kind of change their mentality and say, look, you have to eat every 3 hours. Think about it this way, Omar. This is the best analogy I can give. If you think of the paleo people back in the day, they would starve. The male will go hunting to bring food back. It might be 3 or 4 days. The body goes in starvation mode, so it keeps all the fat in. It lowers your metabolism because it's got to protect itself, right? So the way I tell people now is, in this era, your body, at the cellular level, at the genetic level, it's meant to keep you alive and reproduce yourself. That's what it's all about. It does not know you have another meal waiting for you. It doesn't know if you're in a third world country. It doesn't know if there's a hurricane. It doesn't know if there's a tornado or a crisis. It just knows, I don't know if I'm going to get my next meal. And the way you trick your body is saying, look, I'm going to give you a meal every 2 to 3 hours and you can let go of this fat. And that's what I tell my patients. I give them an experiment. You know, buy Clif Bars or just eat every 3 hours, put on your iPhone, and tell me if you're not more hungry by doing that than eating your once or twice a day. And you'd be surprised. They're calling me up saying, oh, my God, I'm so hungry. I can't wait for the next hour and a half, and I just ate. And that's where it's exciting. Because now they jumped up their metabolism, they're losing more weight, they're more active, they're not tired, they're not sluggish all day long when they binge eating. You know, when you binge eat, you release high levels of insulin and it helps you store fat, then you get this big sugar crash and you're tired and you go to bed. And those calories have nowhere to go, now they get stored as fat.
No, it makes a lot of sense. It definitely makes a lot of sense. And I know that now, you know, reading the book, one of the interesting concepts that I came across was, well, you want to say something? Do you want to jump on that point?
Yeah, a perfect example. I was going to ask you, how many times do you eat a day? You know, and this is the first question I ask my patients that come in the weight loss clinic. And I say, look, two questions I want you to answer. If you can answer these two questions, you're doing this correctly, we can go into intricate stuff. I say, how many meals a day do you eat? And do you eat breakfast? And you would be surprised. 80% of the patients that come in, almost 80%, say, I don't eat breakfast, I don't eat 6 meals a day. So I usually like to ask the host, if you eat breakfast or you eat 6 meals a day?
But I for the most part, go around 4. It's like I'm in the 4 range. I do eat breakfast, you know, majority of the time. I don't really try to skip it. I've had some bouts where it's like I've had experimentation with, I'm sure you're familiar, like intermittent fasting and stuff like that, with like skipping breakfast and stuff like that. But it was mostly in coordination with training, stuff and like that. So I do understand the concept of eating multiple times a day, which is helpful. You know, I think that ultimately is it. And that's, I guess, was what I was going to ask anyway. Was like, I really appreciated the part of the book about talking about hunger and, like, actually people sometimes don't really understand what it is to feel, quote-unquote, hungry. And I think that was an interesting point in the book because I think people have problems thinking that things trigger the feeling of hunger when you might not be really hungry after all.
Exactly. And that has to do with, you know, some people eat because they're boredom, there's emotional stress, they're anxious, hormone levels go up, and sometimes they feel hungry because there's a disconnect with the brain and the body. You know, your gut is actually your second neural system. It's got as much neuroreceptors as your brain, and it's actually a second brain. It's got more serotonin than your brain has. So people don't realize that, and the comfort in food they get. So if they eat the food, that actually your body releases serotonin from the food you eat, and that serotonin makes you happy. That's why people who are stressed out or anxious, eating food is more of a comfort feeling. It actually makes them happy because it releases more serotonin from their gut. And sometimes, depending on the foods you're eating, your body doesn't pick up the satiety. Satiety makes you feel full. And the way it does that is usually oils. Fats help you pick up satiety, right? And when people eat processed oil, olive oil, canola oil, almond oil, you take away the satiety. Because think about it, Omar. If it's its natural form, almonds, Your body has to digest it, take down the fiber, process the fats. So there's a 30-minute connection between your brain and your gut where it's processed that I'm getting fats, I'm going to feel full. But when you give it in the oil form, if I give you a tablespoon of olive oil and you drink it, you already metabolize it so fast, it goes directly to your fat cells. They've done punch biopsies where I can look at your fat cells 20 minutes later and I see exactly where that oil came from that dinner you just had of pure olive oil. But if you ate pure olives, it would take 4 to 5 or 6 hours to fully digest that. You'd feel full. And that 120 calories you just had from the olive oil, processed olive oil, you'd burn 3 calories. From the natural olives, you burn 93 calories because you have more time to burn and use it for energy. So that's a disconnect. Same thing with the high fructose corn syrup. Your body sees that as pure sugar, and it's metabolized that way. So your body can't sense that in the brain enough, and you feel hungry again. And that's how they get you with the high fructose corn syrup. Well, my question to breakfast is, and the reason I ask that question is because over 40 million people don't eat breakfast in the United States. And they've even done a study up until 2005, and they said people that eat breakfast tend to be skinny. People that don't eat breakfast tend to be overweight and obese. So the first thing I tell my patients is, eat breakfast. And here's why they should eat breakfast. Think about it. You went to work 8 o'clock this morning. You got back at 7. You didn't have a meal the whole day. You were just busy. You didn't eat breakfast. Don't you feel cranky and agitated at 7, 8 o'clock at night when you come home?
Cool,
most people do. So I tell them,
absolutely.
You go to bed 8 o'clock and you go to bed 8 o'clock at night. You wake up 8 o'clock in the morning. You fasted for 12 hours, the same thing you did from 8 to 8. But you're not cranky in the morning. You're not hungry. Plus, not to mention, at night you burn more calories than during the day unless you're exercising. Me and you burn about 90 or 100 calories when we're sleeping. Found 70 to 80 just me and you talking right now. So you're burning more calories. The Germans named it breakfast because you're trying to break the fast in the morning. You've been fasting all night. But you don't feel upset not eating breakfast. So now you didn't eat 12 hours at night. You wake up, you didn't eat till 8 o'clock at night. You haven't eaten a meal in 24 hours. Your body goes in starvation mode. It lowers your metabolism. And you feel cranky. Now you start storing fat. And you're doing exactly what a sumo wrestler does. That's exactly what they spend years and years learning how to gain weight. That's exactly what they do.
Yeah, that is an interesting concept, but makes a lot of sense, though. It makes a lot of sense. And not to mention the fact that, you know, if you are that hungry and you skip breakfast and you come home at 7 o'clock, not having eaten all day, you're just going to go to town eating as much as you can because you're starving.
Exactly.
And you know, and that's the other thing that I said that was really interesting in the book. And I know that you mentioned in the book the 20-minute delay even for your brain to realize that it is satisfied with the food. But if you're just plowing food down because you're starving, you might not be chewing it. You might not be – you're just wolfing it down, and your brain never realizes that, okay, you know, I had enough.
Response. And, you know, digestion starts in the mouth when you start chewing. If I tell you – you know what the recommended amount of chews are before you swallow? Nobody does this. I actually encourage you tonight or anybody who's listening to try it if they don't believe me. 30 times before you're supposed to swallow is what's recommended.
I assure you,
I do 15 and I count it, and it's really hard to do 30. So the proper digestion is 30 times before you swallow. Most Americans, maybe 5 or 6, 7 before they swallow their meal. 30.
Oh, yeah.
And a good way to taste this is if you get bread or even milk. If you get milk and you hold it in your mouth for about 30 seconds, the enzymes in your saliva start breaking it down. You actually can taste the sweetness. And that's what it's supposed to taste like. If you even take rye bread and you hold it and you start chewing it and do the 30 chews that you're supposed to, you could see the sweetness of the bread because you're breaking down the bonds, the sugar bonds with the enzymes you have in your mouth. So that's how digestion starts, right in the mouth. People who just drink or eat really fast, it doesn't have a time to process in your brain. You have leptin hormones, you have ghrelin. There's so many hormones that play a factor into it. But at the end of the day, it's proper eating habits. You know, it's almost like this. You have a recommendation. If you have a BMW or Mercedes-Benz, it says put premium gas. You wouldn't hesitate, right? You, Omar, you put premium gas if your car requires it, right?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Because you would say BMW or Mercedes or whatever car this is or Jetta. They've done research that says it needs premium gas. If you put other gas, it's going to damage the car. So no person's going to argue for premium gas. When I say, you know, America comes out with a guideline saying you need 6 meals a day, Obviously, they spend millions of dollars of research. They didn't just come up with that. Then the UK is going to also do the research and come up with the same results. Canada will, Russia will. Every country is going to have to do their own research to basically validate that evidence. So now you probably have, I don't know the exact figure, $1 billion spent, or maybe half a billion, basically sent each 6 meals a day. And most people know that. They get taught that in grade school. You probably heard that, eat 6 meals a day, eat fruits and vegetables. They come out with studies, one was last week, eating more fruits and vegetables will help you lose weight. That's one of those things that everybody knows that. You didn't have to publish a study and spend thousands of dollars to tell people that. But that's the stuff we don't take into advice. If there's $1 billion spent saying, eat 6 meals a day, nobody does it. You know, how can we help people? And that's my goal, is just basically education. You have to teach them, and you have to say, eating more is okay. You can lose more weight by eating more. That's what skinny people do all day. And they say, I don't have time to eat all day, Dr. Fadikoff. And I say, look, it's not easy being skinny too, because they have to eat 6 times a day. They're constantly eating. Their metabolism's working. So if you want to be skinny, you got to do what skinny people do, and they eat all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you just have to observe, and then that you pretty much can come to that conclusion.
Absolutely. It's just seeing patients and patients after patients. You just kind of see, you know, most patients ask me the same thing. I need something convenient. I need something quick. I don't have time. You know, nobody wants to diet. It's not fun dieting. Nobody wants, you know, to sit there and pick calories and count everything. They want something easy. They want something they can do right now, something we don't have to think so much, and that's why I came up with this all-inclusive book. It gives you an exercise chapter in there. It gives you a vitamin chapter. It gives you a chapter on cognitive reconstruction. It gives you a chapter on, you know, how to avoid appetizers. It gives you a chapter on different meals, because I know it's a fast-paced society. People have PTA meetings. People have soccer practices. They have to take their kids. So is there foods they can get that are frozen? You know, I'd recommend them to eat, you know, natural foods and cook. But, you know, some people are busy, and if you need to have a frozen food, I'd put even selections for that. I try to look at every aspect that people can think of, and I try to make it diverse, because, you know, personally, I'm Russian, so there's certain foods that if somebody told me to eat that's not part of my culture, that to me is going to be a new food, and I want to eat something where I can adapt. And I'm going to tell you a patient story that I had. I had a patient that came into my office, 300 pounds, diabetic, high blood pressure, diabetes, almost had to get his foot amputated because his blood sugar was so high, he was on so much insulin, and I actually got permission to talk about him before I'm doing it right now. I got him to lose from 300 pounds down to 300, from 300 pounds all the way down to 210 pounds. So to me, he felt more energy. He felt alive. His blood sugar went down. He didn't have to amputate his foot anymore. He completely changed his life. He had more energy. He actually owns a Caribbean restaurant now. He's a business owner, and he's working. And to go in there to his restaurant, he just feel happy and healthy. He's never felt like that in years, you know? And, you know, just to see that tremendous weight loss. And, you know, he basically said, I eat at a Caribbean restaurant. I eat 1 meal a day. And I went in there, and I went in the restaurant. He had rice, plantains, jerk chicken, a lot of the Caribbean food. And we just made small adjustments in the restaurant. I'm like, you're at a restaurant all day long. We can make healthy adjustments. And just by making healthy adjustments over there without changing too much of his diet, he lost all this weight. So you don't have to drastically change their diet plan. You don't have to change their foods that they love and that they grew up with. And it's just making small adjustments. And for me, to see him off his blood pressure medications, on pretty much off his almost all his insulin, off his CPAP machine, and feeling that great, he's never seen 210 pounds in his life before. That, to me, is more rewarding. The losing weight is the added benefit. The fact that I lowered your blood pressure risk, your risk of colon cancer, your risk of prostate cancer, your risk of stroke, your risk of heart disease, that to me is more rewarding, because we're going to save healthcare costs down the future. It's preventative medicine, and we're going to have a healthier society. It's a win-win for everybody. And by him being healthy, when he has children, he's going to train his children to be healthy. And that's how it works. So, you know, one patient in that one story makes a big difference, and it's just a trickle-down effect, you know?
No, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely makes a huge impact. The ripple effect is crazy. Absolutely. So what, you know, you did mention it briefly, like, what is your take on exercise and weight loss programs?
That's actually a good question, and the reason I actually think that's a good question is because people come to my weight loss clinic and they say, look, Dr. Fadikoff, I didn't lose any weight this month because I didn't have time to go to the gym, I was busy at work, or I injured my ankle. And that's usually an excuse they tell me. And I then show them the studies, and I say, look, exercise helps maintain weight loss. So once you lost the weight, it really helps maintain weight loss. Does it actually help acute weight loss? No. Unless you're Michael Phelps, Serena Williams, an athlete where you're training 8, 9, 10 hours a day. For those people, yeah, they burn 10, 15,000 calories, they can eat whatever they want, they'll lose weight. But for the average person, the average American is working every day, probably not, and the studies have shown that. So when I show them that, and I say, look, 90% is all diet. Even if you don't work out a day today at the gym, the whole month, you still should be losing weight. And then I get that in their head the first month they come in. So that way, when they don't come in and say, oh, Dr. Fatikoff, I didn't go to the gym, because I tell them that's not important, your diet is. If you have a clean diet, you could eat a little bit bad, because if you have a clean diet, and you can work out and not even have to work out that much. I knew bodybuilders that worked out only on the wintertime, and they didn't work out the whole year because their diet was clean. You maintain that muscle preservation. Mm-hmm. You just work out to keep that muscle memory. You don't need to be in the gym every single day, you know? And that's what I tell my patients. You don't have to be in the gym. You just have to eat right. You know, there's periods where I've torn my pec tendon, had surgery, and I wasn't at the gym for a year, year and a half, 2 years, but I didn't get overweight. I just ate healthy. I just knew I couldn't eat this, I couldn't eat that, I couldn't eat this, you know?
Yeah, you know what it is, too? It's like, I think that a lot of people fall into that trap to think, of course, like, it's so important exercising that if they're not going, they end up eating bad as well. It's like almost like an all-or-nothing approach. And I find that in myself sometimes, too. It's like, if I don't go to the gym, and maybe I'm not in that routine of going to the gym too frequently, my diet somehow falls off. But it's all mental, you know? So I think that could have some kind of factor in gaining some weight during the period that you may not be making it to the gym.
Exactly. And I even tell my patients that come in, and you find this mind-boggling. They come in there, they say, I'm starting a weight exercise program. I said, don't. Let's put you on a diet first. Let's get you in the program. Do not work out for a month. And they look at me like, what do you mean don't work out? I'm a workout that helps me lose weight. And I said, no. First of all, initial diet plan, I give people what I call a rapid weight loss diet, get them motivated, get them to lose that 10, 15 pounds. If they start going to the gym, it's hard to do two things. You have a strict workout plan, you have a strict diet, just do one. And then two, when you start working out, you have an increased ravish appetite because your metabolism's kicked up. Now you're going to be eating more. If you're eating more, you might gain weight. And then you have this flux of 2 to 3 week period where it's muscle. So you go on the scale, you haven't lost much, but really you gain muscle and stuff like that. So I'm like, don't go to the gym the first month. Just get your diet right, get it clean, and then go to the gym. And that's how important I believe, and from the research I've seen. I've done it from all three angles and to lose weight. And you know what the interesting question they asked me is, and you'd appreciate this, Omar, and so would your viewers. Well, Dr. Fatikoff, you were a personal trainer. Didn't you get people to lose weight when you were a trainer? And I said, yes. But you think it was the exercise that got them to lose weight, or was it a subliminal diet plan that I gave them when they were working out with me? Most trainers would say this, we'll get you on this workout plan, have a protein shake before, have a protein shake after, try to cut these foods. So you're saying, okay, well, my trainer is always talking about, well, great, I'm going to listen to the diet plan too. Not even knowing they're on a diet plan with their personal trainer. If it was just the training, they would not lose the weight, but they don't realize that in their head. They're just saying, oh, my trainer told me to have a protein shake before I come in, so they do it. They don't think of it. Oh, he told me to have a protein shake before I go to bed. I don't think of it. Well, right there, what the patient I'm thinking about, the client, he had 2 meal replacements in for the day, not even knowing about it, plus the 3 meals he already eats. And I just got him to eat 5 meals a day and breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah. That's...
And they don't even think of that. They're just like, oh, I take this, I take that. My trainer said for me, eat oatmeal for breakfast, and I did. So they're not thinking they're on a diet plan. They're just eating a little bit healthier, and it never becomes a diet. And then they work out, and they feel great, and they shed 30 pounds. They would have never shed any of that weight off, or as much as that weight off, if they didn't eat a little bit cleaner out of those meal replacements.
Exactly. Now, I know that you mentioned that the meal replacement. How do you feel about, like, supplementation when it comes to the particular diet plan in this book, lifestyle modification plan in this book?
Now, I did put in multivitamins because I feel like with the standard American diet, not everybody's getting enough vitamins and nutrients. I think a good multivitamin does help. I know studies show differently, but studies can be manipulated and changed, and just depends on what statistical analysis you're looking at. And it's only for, and those studies only look at 2,000 or 3,000 patients. You know, there's billions of people. I think good multivitamin is good. Do I believe in taking excess amount of supplements? Probably not, you know. If you have, you know, cholesterol issues, taking the fish oil is good. CoQ10 is good. It depends what specific supplement for what specific patient. You know, if you have low B12, yeah, I prefer your B12 supplement. But just to take sporadic supplements, I wouldn't recommend that. And the studies haven't shown really that. In terms of shakes, protein shakes and supplements like that, I prefer them to eat whole foods. There's nothing better than eating a home-cooked meal or a meal where you can cook what's natural food. But I understand we do live in a fast-paced society. People are always on the go, and I'd rather eat something than nothing at all. So if they're running late, a plant-based protein shake is fine. I try to limit it to once a day. You know, a bar is fine, something like that every once in a while. You know, just you gotta give people real solutions to this busy lifestyle we have. So I'd rather them eat healthier now than the standard American diet they're on. And that's why diets like the Paleo diet, the Atkins diet, people talk so much bad about them. But, you know, my defense is I might not agree with that philosophy, but it's still healthier than the standard American diet. Anything is still better than the standard American diet. That's my philosophy. So if they can lose weight and change their lifestyle and feel healthy about themselves on Atkins diet and that works for them, then I'm fine with that. You can't. And the vegan person who eats that, I'm fine with them. Everybody has their own niche, but it's still better than the standard American diet. So if it's healthier than what we already have, I think you're doing positive. Now, if you're giving them something that's worse than the standard American diet and they call it a diet plan, that's where I become in disagreement with, you know, because now you're doing something to hurt people who's better off eating whatever they were already eating, you know?
No, yeah, I can definitely agree with that without a doubt. I'm thinking about turning the show over to, like, some popular things that I think the audience probably caught on, like, the news and stuff as of late. And the first one I was going to get into was, I'm sure you heard about that study where they said that obese people are actually healthier than skinny people. And, I mean, I laughed out loud at first, just the idea that they would make a claim like that. But what are your thoughts on that idea? Is that something that you agree with, or is it just absolutely crazy?
Crazy. There's a New England Journal of Medicine study came out. It's for class 1 obesity. Now, the reason why I think that's the way you interpret the data. Here's a perfect example. They looked at BMI for that study. Different BMIs in different countries determine obesity. So in China, a BMI over 27 is considered overweight. In the United States, a BMI over 25 is considered overweight. So different classifications, too. If you're muscular, think, perfect example, Arnold Schwarzenegger, some of the bodybuilders, their BMIs are well over 30. You know, my BMI is 27. I'm not obese. I'm not overweight. So they take that into consideration. So a lot of those people are actually healthier. People working out at the gym just had higher BMIs, so they tend to be healthier. So I think the way they extrapolated the data, they call it the obesity paradox. If you believe being fat and being overweight is healthy, then I mean, that just basically gives everybody not to lose weight and just eat more and become a obese society. And there's studies after studies after studies that are bad. Now, if you're on the Mediterranean diet, they're obese. They tend to be healthier based on the high amount of olive oil they consume, amount of fats and fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. That's a little bit different case. That's a small population. But when they come out and say, you know, it's okay to be fat, it's healthy for you, I strongly disbelieve and disagree with. And I've actually read that study. And the way they mess with the statistical analysis and just really misleading to the public, basically saying, oh, it's okay to eat whatever you want.
Yeah, no, it was a little weird to just see that pop up. And, you know, it was something that I was, like, definitely wanted to ask you about because that's...
Well, yeah,
given
just, you know,
these mixed messages, it's just terrible.
Yeah, because we're advocating for a healthier lifestyle. You need to be working out. You need to be skinnier. These are, you know, obesity leads to colon cancer, prostate cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes. We're seeing all this stuff, insulin resistance. And on the other end, the study says, no, it's okay to be fat and obese. Eat whatever you want. You know, I mean, that's misleading to the public because, you know, what the obese person is going to say is like, okay, well, that's why I eat whatever I want. That's why I'm big, you know, just to validate and reinforce that what they're doing is okay. And it's not. It's not. It's really misleading. I feel bad, and I hope people realize that's not a good study to look.
Okay. Yeah, and the mixed signals just makes the, you know, this a little muddy of these waters. I know it just gets a little crazy. And, like, I, you know, I definitely wanted to jump into at least the other hot topic in the media recently was, you know, I was curious, what is your take on, like, Dr. Oz and all this news coverage that he's been getting recently about him, you know, and being misleading to the public as far as, like, the things that he promotes on his show?
That's a good question. It is a hot topic. A lot of physicians have mixed feelings. A lot of physicians like him. A lot of physicians hate him. a lot of physicians feel indifferent. Me personally, it's twofold. He provides something, this freedom of speech is the issue. So he basically come out, freedom of speech, but there's a lot of people that follow him and listen to him that they come back to their doctors and say, well, Dr. Oz said it's okay. And that's where it becomes a problem, but it's a twofold story. They actually did a BMJ study, British Medical Journal study, and they looked at Dr. Oz and they said, what information does he give on a show that actually has scientific evidence? It was like 49%. 17% had no scientific evidence. 49% did. So for the most part, he gives stuff that's got actual science evidence. 17% he doesn't. But my question is, you know, if we look at America and you look at other international countries, there's big Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, and practice in India, integrative medicine, functional medicine. There's yet studies that have been done yet. So people were big on this whole probiotic thing and weight loss. Now they're publishing all these studies. They're saying, look, probiotics have actually something to do with weight loss. That's been done in Chinese medicine for 2,000-3,000 years. But now those studies are coming out and validating what they've already known for thousands of years. So it's one of those things, we don't recommend it to our patients, but it's something that it's got to be cautious with, and they have to at least let their physicians know about it. You know, and I mean, Dr. Oz always says at the end, I don't endorse any of these products. I'm just giving the consumers, you know, other options out there. So people have to make informed decisions and can't blame all the blame on a physician. Even though he's as a popular network like he does. So I'm indifferent. If I give my patient CoQ10, I don't have to sit there and explain 30 minutes what CoQ10 is because they're like, oh, Dr. Oz said it was great. I'm glad you agree. That makes my job easy. It makes my job hard when they say, I want to take this. Well, Dr. Oz said it's okay, and the physician doesn't agree. So it's a both ways. It can help you with a lot of the patients because it makes your life easier because they know about it. It can also hurt you because then you have to explain to them. But, you know, that's what a physician is. People come in and say, you know, I want – Dr. Oz is, at least their problem is Dr. Google, that's the problem. People come in and saying, I have this condition, I need to prescribe me that. So people, Dr. Google is who they should be suing, but they're not.
Yeah, I know. I tell you, both ways. I mean, you know, Dr. Google scares the you-know-what out of you half the time about what you might have, and then, like, it tells you all these crazy things that you should be taking as supplements or, you know, additions to your diet. So, yeah, it's too much information sometimes is not, like, a good thing.
Ignorance is bliss. It's sometimes a good thing, huh?
Oh, man, yeah. it definitely gets down to that point. But, yeah, you know, I give Dr. Oz some leeway a lot of times, even though, like, he's like the stamp of everything. It's like a lot of things that I talk about, I've been talking about for a long time. Nobody listened to me. As soon as Dr. Oz says it's okay, everyone's like, oh, yeah, now they're going to do it. So it's like... He's definitely a force to be reckoned with as far as that goes. So it's definitely difficult with it.
17% is no scientific evidence, but you don't know. The evidence might come out tomorrow. Just as long as it's not harmful, it's not killing the patient, and it's done co-along with their physician. Like, their physician knows, hey, I saw this on Dr. Oz. What do you think about it? And they have a good conversation. And a lot of physicians aren't trained in, you know, integrative medicine, alternative medicine. That's why they kind of get restless and defensive, and they say, look, we don't want this Dr. Oz guy here because they, in medical school, we don't get trained on that kind of stuff. But then if you look at international countries like India, Russia, European countries, they get trained in that. Alternative medicine is a big part of their practice. So a lot of those viewers are listening to Dr. Oz in you know, other countries, and they agree exactly what they're saying, what he's saying with, you know, because that's what they've done for thousands of years.
Right, exactly. Well, no, Doctor, you were a magnificent guest. I mean, like, I can't believe how quickly this show has been going along. I just wanted to maybe sneak in one more question before I give you, like, the floor to really just tell the audience how to get in touch with you and, you know, to tell them about a little bit about how to get the book and anything else that you wanted to throw out. But I just really wanted to touch, like, in a one, like, way that you can see. Is there any tips today that you can provide to the listeners that can help them lose weight, like, you know, if they want to just start right now?
Sure. Eat breakfast. That's studies after studies should eat breakfast. Tip one. Tip two, eat every 3 hours. They can do that every now, except their phone. Tip three, sleep, get a good night rest. People that sleep 7 to 9 hours actually lose more weight than people who don't, that sleep less than 7 hours. Good night sleep helps balance the hormone levels and the cortisol. Step four, drink plenty of water. Believe it or not, water, and now when people say this, drink more water, lose fat loss. There's actually research behind it. You people who are skinnier actually have more body fat percentage of water, 67% water, than people who are obese, only have 50%. And there's actual scientific evidence if you drink more water, it'll help you lose more fat from the fat cells. So drink more water. If you're not today, start right now. It's going to help you lose more weight. I mean, those are four tips. And then walk or exercise every day is going to help maintain your weight loss. Those are five tips you can do. Eat breakfast. Don't skip meals. Eat every 3 hours. Don't binge eat. Get a good night's rest. You know, and drink plenty of water. That's easier said than done. Those are five easy tips that anybody can do right now, but it's really hard. 80% of the people that come to my clinic can't eat breakfast and can't eat 6 meals a day. So it's easier said than done. If everybody did these five steps, I'd be out of business. But that's a good thing because I want people to be healthy. I'd rather people be healthier than, you know, going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it's like, you know, like those things are kind of simple to start, which is really good to do that. I mean, anybody could, I shouldn't say anybody, but it's relatively easy to increase your water. I'll tell you one thing that, and I don't know if you can have a second to comment on that, is like sleep is a humongous issue. When I was doing, you know, counseling as well, that was like the topic that always came up. There's just so many people who have difficulty going to sleep, difficulty winding down, difficulty just even getting a good night's sleep throughout. So any tips on that? Because like I said, it's one of your five tips. You know, I just want to see if you can have a tip inside the tip for that one.
Sure. It's a good sleep hygiene. Don't work out 3 hours before. Try not to have caffeine after 5 o'clock. Try not to eat a meal after 8 o'clock. Drink water before you try to go to sleep. You know, make sure your room is 2 degrees colder than the rest of your house. These are all avenues. You know, don't eat in the place where you're going to sleep. Don't watch TV or have any light sensitivity right before you go to sleep. If you work these off shifts, you can get over-the-counter melatonin. It's fairly safe to take if you want before you go to sleep. I mean, stuff like that. Those are, you know, 10, 15 tips within one, but people don't do that. People eat where they sleep. They watch TV where they sleep. They work out. They'll go to the gym at 10 o'clock at night at LA Fitness or Lifetime Fitness, whatever gym they have, a Gold's Gym, and then they try to go to bed an hour later. Well, that's not going to happen. Your heart rate's up. You just came out of the workout and stuff like that. Usually I work out in the morning to get energy. People go work out at night and expect to fall asleep an hour later, you know?
Yeah. No,
stuff like that. Read a book, you know, take a hot bath or something. Just kind of unwind just to relax yourself. You know, the hour or two before you go to bed, it's really about unwinding down and relax, not be stressed out, yelling on the phone, you know, watching TV with the light sensitive at your eyes. You know, those are good, helpful tips. And they're not going to happen overnight. Those take months to build, you know. The solution is not pop an Ambien and go to bed because you can't fall asleep. It's about building good habits.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I definitely agree with that. Well, no, listen, thank you for being on the show. I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, leave any parting thoughts. And most importantly, just how can the audience get in touch with you, you know, your social media accounts, your email address, your website. If you could throw all that out there for us, that we'd greatly appreciate.
Oh, thank you, Omar. Thank you for having me for a wonderful show. People can go to my website at drfadikoff.com. I'm also at Twitter at Eddie Fadikoff, on Instagram on Eddie Fadikoff, MD, on Facebook on Fadikoff. You find me on all the major social medias. And they can purchase the book on my website, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. I have a blog on my website for your listeners. If they're interested in the stuff I have to say, they can just read blogs every month. I guest blog for some other blogs out there too. And if there's something interesting they want to learn about or have a question about, shoot me an email. I'm always, you know, up for helping people out and just kind of spreading the message of good health in people. And I want to tell people it's not a fad diet. This is to help you lose weight, sustain weight. And that's my goal. And as a physician, we're held to a higher standard, the Hippocratic Oath. So my goal is not to cheat anybody or promise something that I can't deliver. And whatever I write or whatever I say, I try to deliver on, and I test it on my patients in the clinic. So everything's kind of science and validated and stuff like that. And you have a wonderful show. Keep spreading the good message, and thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show.
Oh, thank you, Doc. I really appreciate you showing up. I think the audience is going to get a lot of helpful tips for sure. And, you know, we're up in New York here, so it's actually getting a little break of this crazy weather, and it's been actually nice and warm. And, you know, I know people are going to be excited to get out there, and hopefully, you know, if they're not ready for the summer, these tips will come in handy. You know, grab your book and, you know, get started, because, you know, it's that time of year. You know,
that's wonderful. Thank you. And, you know, it's all about, you know, people feeling good and, you know, feeling good about themselves and getting the body confidence and losing that weight and getting that blood pressure down, the diabetes under control, you know, that's my goal. That's, to me, that's the added benefit. It's the weight loss is the added benefit. It's the health benefits I get, the reward I get when they're off their CPAP machine, you know, when they don't have headaches, they don't have migraines, they don't have irregular menstrual periods. I mean, that to me is rewarding if I can get that with their weight under control. But that to me is more rewarding than anything as a physician, you know, as an internist.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's good stuff, good stuff. Well, Doc, I hope you have a good night. And, again, I want to just thank you for being on the show. And thanks for all the awesome tips that you provided to us.
Thank you.
All right, have a good night, Doc. That was Dr. Eddie Fadikoff. Very, very good show. Got to get the book. The book is great. Interesting recipes and even the ideas of just substituting foods that you might love and you can substitute out to incorporate into your diet, trying new things, trying to eat the things that you do love as well, and just how to portion it. And it's just a really good book. Just wanted to thank my listeners for listening. And again, appreciate the doctor showing up the show, and we'll be in touch soon, and I will be signing out now. All right. Have a good night, everybody.